This is an ABC podcast.
This is Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia.
Hello and welcome to Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Bobby McCumber. Professor Chiochi Ravulo has always led with love and a whole lot of empathy. Whether he's counselling young Pacific Islanders or speaking up for our queer communities, the Fijian Australian academic, actor and author makes sure everyone is included and heard. Bulavanaka Chiochi.
Nizam Bulavanaka and g'day.
Hi. Chiochi, when you were little, some kids would describe you as being extra. Just how extra were you?
I was pretty extra in the sense of, you can even hear it from my little intro there, like, hi, like I'm very excitable, I'm very passionate about what I do. And I think the extra thing comes from me just being myself. And I think I sort of learned that that was key to life, that being me was something that I wanted to bring to different spaces and places. And I remember feeling comfortable with that as part of my journey, especially when I was in different places like primary school and high school.
I can tell from your voice and and everything, you're a born entertainer. But who were your idols growing up?
Yeah, my idols, I definitely had great support around me. And so I had a fantastic primary school teacher that really encouraged me to be myself. I remember in year four, I got up in front of the whole class and I performed a song, like it was like a karaoke song, I think. And it was me. It was a Darryl Braithwaite song and it wasn't Horses, you know, the song Horses. It was Home or House, I think it was. And I remember performing it, you know, on the little stage in the library in front of the whole class. So it was a thing, right? And I remember just sort of doing it, just doing this whole expressive dance sort of thing. But at the time, I think, again, it was just me being me. But now I look back and I'm like, wow, what an extra kid. But more so even, what a queer kid. Like, So, yeah, people like that really were helpful. So shout out to Mrs. Sue Reinflesh. She was my primary school teacher for a while because I went to a small primary school in South Sydney. Other key public school educators were influential in me developing my ability to be me.
As a young kid, whose posters were on your wall? Who did you love listening to growing up?
Oh, I loved all of the classic stuff, like the R&B stuff. But in saying that, before I got to, and this was like in my mid to late teens, but before I got to that era, I was a Madonna fan and a Janet Jackson fan.
Oh, yeah.
And Alanis Morissette. So, yes, this was me burgeoning who, of course, are queer heroes, right?
Yes.
And this is without me really knowing that. And then as I got a bit older in my mid to late teens, I started to connect to more the R&B soul stuff, Boys to Men, Lauryn Hill, Monica, Brandy. All of those key artists really moved me as well. But, you know, I have a soft spot still for all those key classics that come from those queer icons.
I love all of those artists that you, this is my childhood. You mentioned when you got up and you sang a Darryl Braithwaite song in front of other people. How did that make you feel afterwards or even during?
It made me feel seen. It made me feel like I was being someone who I wanted to be later in life. I think what draws me to performing is entertaining others. Yes, I'm reminded by my best mate recently. He said, you just love the spotlight. And I'm like, yeah, look, I like being in the spotlight. But for me, it is about entertaining. I love being able to entertain others and bring joy to others through my performance. And that's what continues to drive me still to this day, this idea of performing, but also performing stuff that is actually going to be helpful. So a lot of the stuff that I do now, yes, it does mix. There are mixes of things where I perform because it's I think, educational, but there's also stuff that I do because it's fun. So I'm involved in improv comedy. I do a lot of theater sports, performances, which make up a lot of the stuff that I do. And that brings joy because I like seeing people laugh. Like, I genuinely like seeing people laugh as well. And I think that helps me to feel like I'm connected to others through such performances.
I can hear the joy in everything that you're saying, and I absolutely see can imagine the joy in people's faces when they're watching you perform. Giotti, so your dad is Fijian and your mum is Australian. What's their story? How did they meet?
So my father visited Australia for the first time. So he worked in the tourism industry in the 70s. And so he came across to Australia for the first time in the early 70s. And then he came back a couple of other times in the mid to late. And that's when he met my mother at the ubiquitous Aussie barbecue.
I love it.
So my mum had friends that were connected to Australian friends that were connected also to the Fijian community, and then my dad had friends, Fijian friends, that were then connected to the Anglo-Australian community. And so it was through that interaction that they then found each other, they fell in love, and then, you know, started a family when I arrived in 1980. I've just given away my age now, but I was born in 1980 with my twin sister. And then we originally lived in South Sydney in the St. George area. But when I was 8, we moved across to public housing in Southwest Sydney.
Mm. So you mentioned you're a twin. You're also one of 5 kids.
That's right.
What did you love about being from a big family?
What I love is that you've got the ability to be with others in the family. You always have other people that you can connect with and to talk with. Growing up with twin sister definitely was fantastic. Like, we're very close as siblings. We're very fortunate as siblings to have that bond and that connection. But I always laugh thinking that I will never know what it's like to have my own birthday, because I always share my birthday. Shout out to my twin sister, Clara. No, I love sharing my my birthday with you. But yes, it is a joy to have such close connections with siblings, but also with our family. My late mother really established that real family dynamic and really developed why it was important for us to connect as a family to each other as siblings, but also my dad did the same too.
What is your relationship with your twin? Are you complete opposites? Are you very similar?
We are similar. So she is talkative and loves a good combo with people, especially strangers. So I feel like I'm describing myself too. So she is very charming and relatively loud, loves a good time out, and has, you know, some great friends that have become mutual friends over the many years as well. She works in the human services industry as well. So she works in childcare, but also in disability support as well. So she has a love for people, a shared love for people. And that's something similar to what we have as siblings as well.
You mentioned this. You did grow up in public housing. What did you take in from communities around you?
I was quite an empathetic kid. I remember being quite young. So we're talking about 6 or 7, and then I moved to public housing when I was about 8. I was always aware of the smelly kid, those that weren't the accepted kid in the school. And I would always go out of my way to make friends. But it's interesting, someone said to me recently, maybe you were a smelly kid too. Well, that's okay. I'm okay to be a smelly kid. But nonetheless, I was one of those kids that would, yeah, make friends with everybody. And I would make sure that other people were included, that were part of the community. And so having that empathetic view and approach to life helped me to then understand the realities of the world quite quickly, because I was growing up in a public housing community where people were lovely, so lovely, but you could see were struggling with various social and welfare needs and issues. And I think that helped shaped my burgeoning desire to become a social worker.
As you grew taller and started to develop, did you notice people started to treat you differently?
Very, very much so. So I, like many other Pacific young people, looked older than my age, to the point where when I was 14, I had to ask my school to provide a school ID, which was never done before, to ensure that when I got on the bus, especially on the weekend without a bus pass, that people wouldn't ask for a concession card, because I wasn't eligible for a concession card. A concession card was given to someone at the age of 16 and above. But because I always looked older in my early teens, started to grow facial hair as well, and physically I was always bigger, yes, I started to get treated differently because of my appearance. And that started to also play negatively in my view of myself and how I would then be perceived by others because of my physical appearance.
How did that impact you as a child?
Yeah, there was some negative impacts, and it started to become more and more evident in my mid-teens, where I started to feel different because of the way in which I was treated in public spaces. So I remember experiencing levels of discrimination with security guards in local supermarkets that would literally follow me around. I would note that, and I would see them watching me as I walk through the aisles, even to the point where at the checkout I would have my bag searched and like really in depth, like not just open your bag. It was, they would go in and have a look and move things around in my bag to check if I hadn't stolen anything. And that just, yeah, really, that really shocked me at the time that it first happened. But then I've just sort of, to be honest with you, come to accept that. Cause I still get levels of that still to this day. The other key thing is that when I was 15, I also found a dream job at the local cinema. And I loved that because of my aspiration to become an actor. And so I went to my first shift. Loved everything about it. I remember going, oh my gosh, I get to check people's tickets, but I get to sneak in and watch what's on the screen. Like, you know, that sort of thing. And so I remember doing that, loving it. And then the next day, because I was then set to come to another shift the next day after that. So the first shift was on the Tuesday, the next shift was on the Thursday. But on the Wednesday, I get a phone call. They asked to speak to my mother. And then I can hear the actual manager saying that during the first shift, the owner of the cinema complex came in and has requested that I don't return back so that I'm no longer able to work for the cinema. And I remember saying, Mum, ask why. Because again, I could hear the conversation play out. And the reason that they gave was because I was not the right image for the cinema.
You're kidding.
So that further reiterated this notion of being different, and different possibly in a way that wasn't acceptable to others.
How did those racist experiences affect you?
To be honest with you, I still think, like, I'm now in my early to mid 40s and just quietly. And so I think I've still been on a journey, to be honest with you, Bobby, in regards to understanding how I'm perceived by others because of those racist interactions in my mid teens. We know from research, we know from the theories that you develop your identity, your burgeoning identity as a person in your mid-teens before you become an adult. Just during those years, 15, 17, 18, those years is when you start to become aware of who you are then going to become because of what you experience in your mid to late teens. So I'm not going to lie. Yes, those particular interactions and incidents have had an impact on my ability to understand myself, but there's a big but there. I believe that those interactions were formative in helping me in my aspirations to be involved in creating a change or a difference in society because of those experiences.
And you obviously didn't let that dull your shine and you went on to pursue performing arts. Tell me about some of your most iconic acting roles.
So, yes, I spent my last 2 years of schooling, high schooling at Newtown High School of the Performing Arts. Shout out to Newtown High School of the Performing Arts. And I got in as a drama student, surprise, surprise. And also as part of being a performing arts student, you had to do 2 performing arts areas. So at the time there was drama, which I got in for, music and dance. And dance wasn't ready for me yet. So I chose music, which I also had a passion for, and I then pursued both of those particular areas in the 2 years. And I wanted to become an actor after I finished high school, but my father was like, no son of mine's becoming an actor. So I then, of course, decided to do social work. But I've learned that I can use my performing arts skills in and across my social work, even in and across the teaching that I do at university. But a lot of my performances has been in comedy. So I've been involved in a lot of the Paul Fenwick shows in the mid to late 2000s. So Fat Pizza, Swift and Schiff Couriers, and Howzo's. So I appear in those. You see me in those iconic Australian shows.
Yes.
And, yes, even in my early 20s, I was 20, I did one episode of Home and Away. So I've got that as part of my resume too.
Yeah, well, Home and Away is often criticised for its lack of diversity on screen. You obviously broke through that as an actor. Tell me about your role. Was it alongside Irene?
It was. So I was one episode and I played a homeless young person. Yay! So definitely broke through, right? And I remember in that episode also, apart from being a wayward young person, I was, in my dialogue, fat shamed for wanting more food. Yay. So, yes, areas of discrimination are intersectional. They happen across all areas. But again, you know, that was 2000, yeah, 2000, 2001. And so it is interesting. Have things changed since then? Yes, I think I'd like to think that it has happened, but this is a challenge for our arts industry, for our creatives, for our performance industries that we do need to, I think, be better.
Let's bring it back to you and your family. You eventually told your parents that you were queer. Mm-hmm. Did coming out affect your relationship with your parents?
Interestingly, when I came out to my parents in my early 20s, my mother was completely shocked and surprised, which makes me laugh when I think to myself, did she not realise how queer I was as a kid and as a teenager? Anyway, it doesn't matter. But my dad was like, yeah, no, I knew. Yeah, I knew. So that was no surprise. But what was really, really interesting, Bobby, was before I came out, I actually didn't have a very good relationship with my dad. There were some strains there, definitely. But it was actually through me coming out to my dad that I think he realised that it was important for him to nurture the relationship with me. And, you know, I think that's a real reflection of a lot of those Pacific concepts that we see in Pacific Indigenous cultures around the sacred space or the respect that we have for each other, the importance of reciprocity and the idea of creating a connection or nurturing those particular connections. You know, in some Pacific languages, it's called va, the sacred space. In Fijian, it's vera kovi. Also, Slovakia, this notion of reciprocity. And I think that he actually understood that he needed to really put in some effort to further facilitate a better relationship with me and vice versa. So interestingly enough, unlike many other coming out stories where parents may reject their child, And I do see that in our Pacific communities, and that that can occur because of lots of different factors, including faith and religion. My father actually embraced me more. And as a result of that coming out, I have a great relationship with my dad now.
I love that story. That's wonderful. Mm. What do you love most about being queer and the Pacifica person?
What I love about those two areas of my identity is the knowledge that prior to colonization, and I know this from the research that I've done and the writings that I've done and continue to do, a lot of our cultures and expressions, our gender and sexual expressions in many of our Pacific settings in the islands was fluid and flexible. So sex, sexuality, gender was all undertaken or performed in the context of community. It wasn't in the context of morality or religion. And it was through colonization and the missionaries that we then started to reshape the way in which we understood ourselves from a gender point of view, from a sexuality point of view, where we started to perform certain gender roles and expectations in the context of Western perspectives or white perspectives. And so I think knowing that I've come from a long line and lineage of a culture that traditionally was fluid and flexible brings me a lot of strength, knowing also that that is part of my bigger picture approach to life, is to further reclaim and support a resurgence of those knowledges.
You're listening to Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Bobby McCumber, and I'm speaking with academic, actor and author, Professor Chiochi Rabulo. Chiochi, your dad was strict about focusing on your senior studies instead of acting, and so you pursued a degree in social work. What were you feeling about this move?
Yeah, at first I was quite keen to go into the acting world, but and it's interesting because in the last couple of years of high school, I was involved, actually from year 8 to year 11, year 12, I was part of the token ethnic extras for an Australian television show called Heartbreak High. classic Australian television right there. And I loved it, because I was part of a small group of islanders also that were, you know, asked regularly to come in to do episodes. And my dad, yes, told my agent at the time that I had to stop from doing that because I had to refocus on my education. And I wasn't struggling. It was just for him, because he only went up to year 8 in his own education. He really wanted to ensure that his children would excel, you know, in those settings, in educational settings. So I understood that, and I understood that he wanted me to go on and do a degree at a university. So I then started my social work degree, and I just loved what it brought. It brought a bigger understanding of the world around me. It helped me make sense of my own lived experience growing up queer, growing up in public housing, growing up as a person of colour, identifying as an Indigenous Pacific person. It helped me then to make sense of the need to create societies that are inclusive. And I remember doing my placements in social work degrees in Australia. You could do 1,000 hours of placement. So I did a series of placements. My first one was at a youth justice centre out of Campbelltown. My second placement was at Centrelink, the social security agency for the government, federal government, which was interesting because that helped me learn about the realities of government structures. But my last placement was at an adult correctional facility and a jail called Long Bay Jail. And I worked there as an alcohol and other drug counsellor. And it was through that I realised I wanted to work with young people, because if I could assist in supporting young people to create more helpful pathways beyond their offending, then they wouldn't develop recidivist offending behaviour, which then would lead to adult crime. So I then really invested my time post my initial degree in social work, working with young people involved in the criminal justice system.
In 2021, you became the Professor and Chair of Social Work and Policy Studies at Sydney University. and the first Pacifica professor in Australia. What did that moment mean to you and also your dad?
So interesting, Bob, because at the time I had no idea. It was through a Pacific colleague in Melbourne that brought that to my attention via a social media posting. And I remember my new boss at the University of Sydney saying, oh, I saw that posting. Is it true? And for me, I was completely chuffed. Still to this day, I'm like, wow, that's incredible. And for my dad, that was, you know, such an achievement for him. Because we know that for Pacific people, our individual achievements are not just our own individual achievements. They're everyone's achievement. But the other thing, though, that makes me think about that particular achievement is why, Bobby, did it take so long for Australia to have a person of a Pacific heritage become a professor, a full professor in Australia? Why did it take until 2021 for that to occur? So that for me is the ongoing challenge, and that's the ongoing, you know, fervor and passion to try and ensure that our education alongside our other social systems are responsive and are creating scope for Pacific people to achieve, to thrive, to excel, to ensure that we are, you know, we are able to, you know, work successfully in these areas, including education, to be part of these particular areas in a way that is sustainable.
You also have a special way of opening conferences. Can you tell me about that?
So I generally will start whenever I'm invited to do a keynote. I generally will start with doing a song, like a chorus of a song or a verse of a song. And the song generally is related to what I'm talking about. But I do that because, yeah, I love to sing, of course. As the performer in me, of course. But it also is a way of engaging the participants, the listeners, the audience are into what I'm about to talk about. I'm keen to ensure that if I'm presenting, I want to be interactive and engaging.
If I was sitting in a conference and the presenter opened with a song, yes, I would be up and out of my seat. Like, how do people react when you do that?
Because what I'll do, I'll get up. So someone will introduce me, you know, and then I'll stand up at the lectern and then I'll just look at people and then I'll just go, and then I just start singing.
Oh, I love it.
And you can see people going, what is happening? And sometimes you'll see people also get out their phones and start to record, which is lovely. And I'll see people repost it later. But yeah, for me, again, it's about creating a comfortable environment for everybody so they feel like they are part of the learning journey, that they are part of something that they are sharing in.
Chiochi, thank you so much for joining me and being extra and being you. You are incredible. I've had a wonderful time. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Bobby.
That was Fijian Australian actor, academic and author, Professor Chiochi Rabulo. You've been listening to Stories from the Pacific. I'm Bobby McCumber. And to catch more great stories about incredible people from the Pacific, just search for ABC Pacific. This story was produced on the lands of the Yagara and Turrbal people.